Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Seems like we've been away for a month. Even though it's really only been a week, but we welcome you back inside the playbook. It is Tuesday here on Patriots.com radio. My name is John Rook, and wow, I don't even know where to begin about on Sunday. And in fact, I think tend to probably just kind of slide away from Sunday a little bit. Although, as many of you who are familiar with the program realize that normally on Tuesday we nitpick Tuesday, and there'll be plenty of time to pick nits on Sunday's game. I mean, goodness gracious, I think the whole game was a nitpick in and of itself. But we got to do a little, I got to come out of the closet on this one, so to speak. I had a college basketball broadcast on Sunday, right at the same time as the Patriots. So I only caught bits and pieces. I did not probably see the detail of the game as much as you did. So, without dwelling on the negatives, we can hit on some of the high points. Certainly, I think, versed enough in what happened to go with that with you here today. But honestly, I mean, what is there else to dwell on when you lose the way you lost on Sunday? Especially when you come off of the back-to-back offensive performances that Matt Cassel had, and then you kind of get shoved back down into reality when you face the number one defense in the NFL. I have to admit, I don't think anybody, and I think the final score in the game, I think not so much that the Steelers won, but just in the form and fashion that the Steelers won, came as the biggest shock to me, probably to you, to just about everybody. This was a close game. It was a tight game right up until the third quarter, and of course then the Patriots turned the ball over on 5 consecutive possessions. I don't even think that that even qualifies as a nitpick here, kids. To be honest with you, that's just a wow is all that is. I don't really have. I mean, can we get down to some of the nitty gritty here? Probably so. Probably so. And undoubtedly we will. But I'm ready to kind of sort of come out with you today in terms of. I'm getting closer to the realization that I don't think that this Patriots team is a playoff team. I know we talked about that when we last did the show a couple of weeks ago. And by the way, I hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. Ours was hectic. Managed to take the family with me on the trip out to Anaheim for a college basketball tournament last week, and that in which I was covering. But you know, anytime you try to bring the family on a vacation, especially when it's a working vacation, you know. It's not much of a vacation. Trust me on that one. But nevertheless, it was still good to have them with you and all that stuff. And I trust that you and yours had a very safe and happy holiday. Now that we get back to the work week, and here we are the 2nd of December, and now you've got two straight games that you're facing on the road again and on the West Coast again, you know, the battle line has been drawn. This team has no more room for error. And I know I said this a couple of weeks ago, and I'm going to repeat it now. I do believe that the Patriots have sort of, even though that Matt Cassel has, for the most part, had such an unbelievable season, better than anybody has a right to really have expected of him in a big picture sense. I don't know that this is a playoff team. I thought that 10-6, which is, I said 10-6, 11-5 in week one. Back in week one, I said that this team was still capable of 10-6 or 11-5, and that either of those figures would probably get them in the playoffs. Well, didn't really realize that you'd get a couple of other teams in this division that would prove themselves eminently capable. And obviously we're talking about the Jets and the Dolphins both, even though it was the Bills that kind of set the early pace in the AFC East. I don't think anybody realized that this division would improve from top to bottom, or from bottom to top as the case is, as much as it did. The Patriots obviously lost a golden opportunity on Sunday with the Jets getting beat by Denver. So it's easy to do a lot of what-ifing, and I've done my own share. I do believe that the Patriots can win the final four games. I do believe that's possible. I don't think it comes as a shock and surprise to anyone that I'll tell you here that they need to win all four. Because if they go 10-6, they will not reach the playoffs. They need to be 11-5 to have a shot. Otherwise, we'll be watching. And maybe there is a contingent now. Maybe there's a faction of fans now. Maybe you're one of them that looks at this team and doesn't feel that it's playoff worthy. That's what I want to ask you today. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Webradio@patriots.com, just as always, and 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. Is this Patriots team still playoff worthy? I need some honest answers here. You've seen them as well as I have. You've watched them. You've listened to them. You've read about them. You've talked about them. As they presently consist at 7-5, they're on the outside looking in. They're behind both Baltimore and Indianapolis, and obviously they're behind Indianapolis simply because of head-to-head. So they're really, in effect, two games behind the Colts. Is this New England Patriot team right now playoff worthy? My answer would be no. Obviously, they're on the outside looking in right now, so if the playoffs were to start today, no, they wouldn't be in. Do they have an opportunity to get in? Yes. Do I think they'll get in? Well, that's another story. That's another story. Every week, these last 4 weeks, and you'll hear this probably from the guys in the locker room, you'll hear this from the coaches, you'll hear this from everybody. They're going to take it one game at a time. They always do. But I think they all realize that there is a sense of urgency here about every game. They've got to keep an eye toward, you know, the future. And, yes, there I'm sure will be some scoreboard watching with the Jets, maybe even with the Dolphins still, and certainly with the Colts and the Ravens. They're a game back of those with four to play. It may actually be easier to win the division and get in that way than it would be to win the wild card at this stage of the game. It's possible that that is a realistic scenario. So you have to hope that at some point, you know, you jump the Jets and maybe you have to be one game ahead of them. Because if you end up in a tie, you know, you're talking about division records coming into play and conference records coming into play. And the Patriots' losses are all in the conference. So, I mean, we'll start to nitpick, I think, at this probably over the course of the next few weeks. But, you know, the loss, and so you got a loss against the Chargers, you got a loss against the Dolphins, you got a loss to the Colts, you got a loss to the Jets, you got a loss to the Steelers. You got five AFC losses. You're not going to win any tiebreakers where that's concerned, are you? Nope, you're not. Don't feel too confident about it when it comes to breaking ties there. So if they play perfect football the rest of the way, can they get in? Yes. Will they get in? That's the big question mark today. And that's why I'm asking you, do you think this is a playoff-caliber team now? Webradio@patriots.com. So that's what I want you to answer for me today. I also, obviously, we'll get into nitpicks for Sunday's game. I'll hold on to mine for just a little while, just so we have something, you know, maybe juicy to talk about a little bit later on. So I do want you to come up with, you know, pick one aspect. I mean, obviously, there's so many different aspects of the game that you could kind of look at and say, geez, why did they do that? Or, you know, that was terrible, that was horrible. You know, here's a little nitpick thing that's been bothering me for a while about this. Whatever it may be, pick one aspect of the game on Sunday to Pittsburgh. Pick one aspect of it and tell me why it really sticks in your craw. That's our nitpick. That's our big nitpick today. Pick one. You got several to choose from. Fire it off, and let's see where we go with it. Danny O'Neill, who covers the Seahawks for the Seattle Times, he is going to join us here in approximately 15 minutes, and then we hope to have Brian Lowe from Patriots Today in the second hour. And we're also in the second hour going to let you listen into Dean Pease, Patriots offensive coordinator, in a conference call that he had earlier today as well. We haven't really done a lot of that this year, and part of that is because you certainly have access to it. But we've tried, at least in this program, to focus a little bit more on the opposition coming in. And I think that's something that this program should do. I mean, you know, the PFW in Progress show does a great job of talking about the Patriots and the team and the personnel. And while we pick up on that here and we try to expand upon that by giving you our own thoughts and our own opinions based on our observations here, the offense is, and the defense both, but, I mean, you know, the offense and the defense are both under the gun. And so we thought, because the defense has been, what's a good way to put this? Maligned? Hammered? How do we want to describe the Patriots defense right now?
Sucky, sucky, sucky.
Well, that would be one too, maybe. Anyway, we thought that it would be appropriate here, because this is not all Dean Pease's fault. Okay, I'm not by any stretch am I laying this on his feet. Nope. Not doing it. Players have to play. Coaches try to put players in the positions that they are in order to make plays, and the players still have to make plays. Now, ultimately, it's the whole, you know, well, you can't fire one, you know, it's easier to fire one coach than, you know, 11 starters or whatever it may be. I'm kind of borrowing a baseball adage there. But the fact is that, you know, ultimately he may still be held responsible. But didn't we all feel a little bit different about this defense going in, especially because you knew you had a guy like Dom Capers that was ready, willing, and able to assist? Were we all lulled into a false sense of security, thinking that, you know, that chemistry just might automatically be there because a guy like Capers is so well-respected around the NFL? It just hasn't happened. This team just is not, defensively, has not gelled like we thought it would. Now, yes, I know they've had significant injuries. Again, not using it as an excuse. It is a fact. Other guys have to come up and play and step in. But the secondary was already a sore spot coming in. Linebackers, we know, are starting to get a little longer in the tooth. Not that they're not capable, but, yeah, there's a half a step or two gone there. And the defensive line, well, yeah, it's been banged up the last couple of weeks. Ty Warren's been inactive the last 2 weeks. He hadn't been able to play. And you could certainly make an argument that he was the most effective down lineman Patriots had in the early part of this season. I mean, I remember after week 3 or 4, we were talking about him being a potential Pro Bowler. Pro Bowler! He was playing at that kind of a level. And he has not suited up in either of the last 2 weeks. You know, Vince Wilfork has had a pretty good year. I think we all realize that we'd like to see a little bit more out of a guy like Richard Seymour. I'm not putting this blame on any one person. I'm just saying that as a unit, it has come up short. And so I think it's appropriate that we focus on what the defensive coordinator thinks about his unit at this stage. Because to me, that's my biggest... All right, I let the cat out of the bag. Said I was going to save it for later. I'm not saving it for later. I'm giving it to you now. My biggest nitpick overall is the defense. I'm looking at the defense in a big picture. And I know that they turned the ball over on 5 consecutive possessions. How can you miss that? I mean, I have to admit, I'm right in the middle of my basketball broadcast. Dan, I'm right in the middle of my basketball broadcast on Sunday, and I've got GameCast on, okay? So I'm able to watch what basically is going on in the football game at the same time, even though I physically don't have a television monitor there. I'm on the West Coast, so first of all, I didn't get that game. I got the Denver Jets game. And so we're watching the Denver and Jets game on the monitors there on Press Row, and I'm sitting there going, oh, my God, the Jets are going to get beat. They're going to get beat. This is a great opportunity, right? And so I've got the GameCast on to follow the Patriots while I'm in the middle of my basketball game, and I'm, you know, 10-10 at halftime, and I saw the, you know, the dropped touchdown pass, you know, before halftime, and then the missed field goal, and I'm like going, this ain't going to happen. I knew it at halftime. I knew it.
Wasn't a great way to start off the third quarter either.
No, I know, but I just knew it at halftime. I said, I can't believe that you can drop something like that. And there's another nitpick for you, by the way. Randy Moss, bad weather games. Big opportunities, okay? I mean, I know what he's done, and I know I'd much rather have him than not have him. But you know what? You have to ask yourself the question today. If Tom Brady were the quarterback, would he have dropped that ball? Ask yourself the question and see if you can come up with an honest answer. If Tom Brady were the quarterback, would he have dropped the ball? I don't, the weather is not an excuse, just like injuries are not supposed to be an excuse. I'm sorry. I don't buy it. I never have. Weather is a part of football. It was rainy. It was miserable. It was cold. I know Dan's just told me that, you know, he's still drying out his four layers from Sunday's game. I get all of that. By the way, were the announce windows open, Dan? Were the booth windows open?
I think so.
Okay, good. I want to make sure, because if Dickerson didn't open up the windows, I'm gonna punk him. Okay? It's football, damn it! You got to play in the elements. The elements are a part of the game, and the game is a part of the elements. They go hand in hand. No excuses. So if injuries aren't allowed, weather is not allowed. That's the same for both teams. And I think in this particular instance, I don't know for certain, but I think in this instance it just snowballed on the Patriots and they couldn't stop themselves. Well, if Randy Moss isn't going to give a rat's patoot, then, you know, why should I? I'm not saying that that's what everybody felt, but I can see where that could happen. I could see where the concentration level would come down. I could see where, you know, you're in the locker room at halftime thinking, okay, we just blew a golden opportunity. Oh, man. That stinks. We should have done that. We should have had that. And you're dwelling on the negative more so than thinking about, okay, here's what we have to do to be successful in the second half. It's human nature, kids. We all do it. We all do it in every walk of life that each of us is involved in. We all do it. It just doesn't make it any easier when you're a football team and, you know, and your livelihood depends on wins and losses, hopefully more wins than losses. My nitpick has been with the defense in a general sense. It just has failed to live up to any kind of expectation that I had or maybe you had all year. Injuries notwithstanding, weather this past weekend notwithstanding. It is bent way too much. It has not been as effective as it should have been. It needs a tremendous amount of work. I'm not sold on the fact that the 3-4, I've never been a huge fan of the 3-4. I'm more so less a fan of the 3-4 defense after watching this team perform the way they have. You got four linebackers there, and none of them can stop the run. Gerard Mayo has been the one silver lining in an otherwise very, very stormy cloud. You know, for all of the bluster that Richard Seymour, you know, has brought to the table over the course of the last few years of his career, I think even Richard has to realize this is a what-have-you-done-for-us-lately game. And a what-have-you-done-for-us-lately sport. And if you hold him to that particular, you know, measuring stick, can you answer it? Can you answer that question? I don't think you can. I'd be willing almost to give a pass to Vince Wilfork in the middle because his job is to two-gap and his job is to, you know, run stuff, and his job is to allow, you know, to make plays up front so the linebackers can finish it off. I think Vince Wilfork, based on what I've seen from my observations, has done that. So I'm willing to put Vince Wilfork in the Gerard Mayo category of being a silver lining in an otherwise dark, stormy cloud, but I'm not putting anybody else in there. So you name a player on the defense, they don't get a pass from me. That's my biggest nitpick, I think, of the entire realm here. All right? So there you go. I've given you a nitpick to work on. Throw me your others, okay? And is this Patriots team, our question of the day, is this Patriots team playoff worthy in your estimation right now? Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. All right, let's sneak in a timeout here. And then we're Danny O'Neill from the Seattle Times. We're going to start focusing a bit today, a little early. I realize the game is not until, what, late? It's a 4 o'clock game again next Sunday as the Patriots, you know, travel out to Seattle. But there's no time like the present because there's just no need to go backwards in time and revisit all that much, right? It's time to move on. If you're going to make the playoffs, you got to win four straight. It starts with Seattle. start taking a look at the Seahawks coming up inside the playbook.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com. Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy, and the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips. And we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've kind of got a million TVs, and their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins. We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Back at the saddle on Patriots Playbook, it is a Tuesday, game week, Seattle, for the New England Patriots. Don't forget to send us your nitpicks and whether or not you feel like this is still a playoff-worthy football team. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Danny O'Neill covers the Seattle Seahawks for the Seattle Times, and he joins us now inside the playbook. Danny, how are you today?
I'm good. I'm good, John. And if you're talking about playoff-worthy teams, you must not be talking about the Seahawks.
Well, I have to admit, Danny, that I use an old adage around here a lot, that no matter how bad you have it, somebody else always has it worse. And I think the Seattle Seahawks probably fit the bill, no matter how bad Patriots fans feel like they have it right now today.
Yeah, the whole city of Seattle, man. We lost our NBA team to Oklahoma City. our college football team here in Seattle, University of Washington, hasn't won a game yet. And then the Seahawks, which have won, they made the playoffs 5 straight years. They've won 4 straight division titles. They're 2-10, which is Mike Holmgren's worst record in 17 years of head coaching.
What the hell's going on up there?
I don't know. It's like maybe the sports teams have started to reflect the weather. Maybe we followed the economic indicators. I don't know. It's a tough time here. Tough times.
Well, let me ask you first and foremost then about something you blogged about earlier today on your website about Jim Mora. And I have to admit that I had heard his name as a possible candidate at the University of Washington, but I did not know that the Seahawks were also interested in him. Can you kind of explain what the deal is?
Well, yeah, he's signed a contract to be the head coach once Holmgren steps down. He did that in February of last year, where it's contractually, they've signed the deal. It was a 5-year deal last year with 4 years, the final 4 years of that contract, or as the head coach.
Okay.
So he will be taking over. There's been a lot of speculation about his potential. Would he be interested in coaching the University of Washington?
Mm-hmm.
It's his alma mater. He's previously expressed affection for the school, and then he had a radio interview when he was still the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, where he described that UW job as his dream job. And that's kind of when you're in the midst of a winless season, you have a lot of alumni that reach out for someone who feels that the school is as special as they feel it is. And Jim's kind of become this prodigal son in that way. But he is signed. He does have a contract to be the next Seahawks coach. There hasn't been any indication that there's any alternative other than that, that's being explored either by Jim or by the Seahawks.
Was this widely known about him stepping in to replace Holmgren?
Yeah, it was. They had a press conference,
okay.
And everything. So yeah, it was. They went through. It was right about the same time that Jim Caldwell was specified as the successor to Tony Dungy. Once Dungy moves along, the difference was that Dungy, when he departs is still uncertain. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Holmgren had already announced that 2008 would be his final season with
okay.
the Seahawks.
Okay. Well, that much I remember. I guess maybe it's just because of some of the other things that are going on around here that I didn't realize that Jim Mora had already been announced as the potential successor there. So now let me ask you this: if that is to be the case, is there a chance that he thinks twice about that to go to his alma mater still?
No, I don't think so. I mean, there's always a chance, and when you're dealing with something as emotional as a coaching job and things like your alma mater, there's always a chance that something could change. And we've all seen it in coaching before, that when you can never say anything for absolute certain for
okay.
the most part. I mean,
right.
There's always a chance. But I very much expect him to be the Seahawks coach. That decision's been made in his mind, I think, and from all indications that I've gotten from people around him, that it's a bit of an uncomfortable situation because he doesn't want to do anything that would belittle the university or make it seem like he holds a lot of affection for it, but
mm-hmm.
that this is he's made the statement that he's not a candidate and that there's nothing that's changed in that regard. But these things we've seen crazier things happen. I mean, just last year, Nick Saban stood in front of cameras and said he was not, or I guess it was 2 years ago, was
mm-hmm.
not going to be the Alabama coach, and then a couple weeks later he was. So things can change quickly, but I don't expect them to in this case.
Yeah, as we all know, money talks, and you know what walks, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
All right, well, that's interesting. That's good stuff. I wasn't quite aware of that. I'm glad I'm up to date on that. Now, I wonder, though, how I guess the overall consensus then would be you have to start building at some point in time for next year, and I'm assuming that building process began a few weeks ago. But can it really move forward, in your estimation, then, with Seattle, with a team that's still got Mike Holmgren trying to win games this year?
Yeah, I think that's kind of become a conversation recently.
Mm-hmm.
How do you handle this?
Yeah, right.
How do you go about? Do you start going with a youth movement? And I think that when you look at the roster, for the most part, they don't have any young players that are not playing right now. They've put a lot of guys in situations. Some of it's through injury. They had a second-year player start at center last week. They have a fourth-year tackle who's playing guard that they've wanted to see him at guard some, and he's now playing in place of Mike Wall at left guard.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have any young prospects. There's not a second-round pick that hasn't gotten a lot of reps because those guys are already playing. Lawrence Jackson, who was the team's first-round pick, he's a starter. John Carlson, the team's second-round pick, he's a starter and is actually leading the team in receptions as a tight end. So I don't know if there's a lot of tinkering left to do this season. I think that they have to make some decisions in the offseason, some of which might be tough, but they don't have any hidden sort of gems that they're unsure about or need to get some seasoning. So I do think we'll see some guys who are injured. Won't come back. Someone like Mike Wall might go on injured reserve this week. Chris Spencer, the starting center, might go on injured reserve this week. So we might see those changes. But I don't think we're going to see a wholesale sort of change in philosophy. I do think that they're going to the one tangible change that Holmgren's hinted at is we might see more T.J. Duckett at tailback.
Mm-hmm.
He's been pretty much their short yardage runner. The one game in which he did get more carries, he did very well, but that was against St. Louis. So I think down the stretch that could be something you see is a little more Duckett as they look to have how the running attack will shape up for next year.
I was just going to ask you about Spencer. What is his, if he goes on IR, what does that bring the total to for Seattle this year?
Oh gosh, I should know that off the top of my head.
A lot.
Got to be close to 10.
Because
they had what really sunk their season. They had a rash of injuries at wide receiver. They came into the year knowing that Deion Branch, who you guys are very familiar with,
mm-hmm.
well, he was coming back from a pretty extensive knee surgery that he underwent in February. So it was going to be pushing it to get him back for the start of the season, and really they expected him to be back for the fourth game, which he was. But while Deion was out, they lost their starting split end. Nate Burleson suffered a season-ending knee injury in the third quarter of the first game. You had Bobby Engram, who suffered a broken bone in his shoulder during training camp, and he missed the first three games. You had Logan Payne, who was an undrafted free agent that they were really high on entering the season. He suffered a season-ending knee injury in the first quarter of the second game. At one point, you had six of the seven receivers that they expected to be atop their depth chart when the season started. You had six of the seven that were unable to play because of injury. And what happened was it really just derailed. Mike Holmgren's offense is built on timing. It's built on the wide receivers making reads and knowing when to make their breaks to recognize coverage and to react to it. Like it really depends on experience. Mike Holmgren's always said that you need 3 years in the system to really understand it as a wide receiver. And without that continuity, their offense just really had a hard time. Then the quarterback started getting hit. Then he started to get, and Matt Hasselbeck's really been banged up since the fourth game on. And you really had this result that it's been really tough. Right now, this would be if Spencer and Wall go on injured reserve, those would be the fifth and sixth players who were starters at the beginning of the season, guys you projected as a starter on the two deep, that are now on injured reserve, done for the season. And
wow.
that's a lot for a team to overcome.
It absolutely is, and I think the Patriots know that a little bit. It just sounds to me that your situation in a lot of ways is similar here, except maybe your snowball got rolling a little bit more quickly.
Yeah, I think so. And the other thing is that, I mean, the Patriots deserve a ton of credit for this, and I think they get it around the league. Their ability to withstand injuries over the past 7 years is just, it's incredible. And then this year you have, I mean, gosh, Tom Brady's the player. I think if you ask people who's the best player in the NFL, I'll bet Tom Brady wins that vote.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been able to remain competitive without him. It's just, it really is incredible. It's a tribute to the franchises, because I think that's really the test of the franchise, of not just the ability to accumulate talent, but to have the machinery in place to make replacement parts. Because in the salary cap era, that's what you have to do. And there's been nobody that's been better than that than New England.
Danny O'Neill again covering the Seahawks for the Seattle Times, joining us here inside the playbook. Danny, you mentioned Deion Branch, and now that he's back with the team after having the injury start to the year, how would you characterize his season thus far?
It's been a disappointment. And actually, I mean, I would say it's pretty fair to say that kind of covers his career here. There's a fair amount of sort of I think there's a lot. He's a sore spot for fans. Fans really do. He's played four games this season. He came back from the knee injury, and then he hurt his heel in the first half of his first game back. And now at this point, he's missed eight games this year. He's played in four games. He's caught 13 passes. He hasn't caught a touchdown. In the previous two seasons, he caught 49 passes last season, but he also missed five games because of a foot injury that he suffered against Pittsburgh. And then the year before that, he caught 53 passes. That was the year he was traded. I think given that Seattle gave up a first-round pick for him, and not only that, but did sign him to the contract that he wanted, that there's been a certain amount of feeling that Seattle got snookered on that one.
Wow. You know, I know that there are a lot of people here that certainly wished him well, but there are a lot of people that also thought that Deion Branch would have been better off staying in the Patriots system. Are you willing to buy into that argument?
Sure. I mean, you look at the numbers that he was putting up there and the sort of big game performances he had. I mean, those two Super Bowls he played are among the all-time great Super Bowl performances. And you certainly can't look at what's happened here and think that... I mean, maybe it would have been better for him as well had he not made the change. Teammates really like Deion, and I know that was true in New England. I know that's true here. They really do. He's a hard worker. He's worked diligently throughout his rehab, and I mean, it's unfortunate when a guy gets bit by injuries, and that is what has happened to him here.
At 2-10, obviously this season is done. And with Mike Holmgren's status such as it is, and we touched on this just a couple of minutes ago, but where is the distraction? And is the distraction, if there is one, is the distraction enough to keep this team from actually beginning the rebuilding process as soon as next year?
No, I think it's an uncommon – you have an odd situation
here. Yes, you do.
Where you have the head coach who has announced it's his final year. That doesn't usually happen.
Yeah, he's a lame duck, really.
But you know, the one thing I hesitate to do is to call him that because he is the force of his personality and what he's done here for the franchise. This was a franchise that was pretty perpetually mediocre.
Yeah.
Like that's what everybody said. They're kind of the 7-9, 9-7 Seahawks don't make the playoffs. And he really came in here and he put together. It took some time, but he put together one of the best offenses in the league.
He did.
And he does have such a force of personality that I don't believe, and I don't believe as someone who's in that locker room and goes around the players, I don't believe you have any guys that are looking for an easy way out.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's a coaching distraction that's been the problem. I think there has been sort of a convergence of factors where you had an offense that for the past 4 to 5 years has really carried the load for this franchise that was not in a position to do that. Some of that's because of injuries, and some of that's because of just the attrition of those players. Holmgren's hand-picked offense has kind of piece by piece eroded. And then you get to where that's always been the strength of this team. And this year they had a really hard time scoring points early on.
Mm-hmm.
And it exposed a defense that, A, was people overestimated how good it was going to be, and B, I think it's a smaller defense that's really going to play at its best with a lead. It's a defense that's built to play off of an offense like Seattle had 3 years ago when they were one of the best in the league. And when they were put in a position where they're playing from behind and the opponents are running the ball at them and grinding them down, that they have kind of withered under that. And I think that the game on Thanksgiving against the Cowboys really showed that, you know, they're a little bit – the Seahawks need some more size. They
yes.
need to find ways to get more size, and they need to look at the play of their linebackers because that was seen as the strength of this defense with Pro Bowlers Julian Peterson, Lofa-Tutupu, Leroy Hill, who's going to be a free agent this offseason. Mm-hmm. They really expected big things from him this season. And that group has not distinguished itself this year. And when you have a situation like that, I mean, I think people always say you need your leaders to come through and with their best seasons to have a successful year, and that just hasn't happened with Seattle.
Yeah, a couple of things I was just going to ask you about. Number one, the game with Dallas on Thanksgiving, 34-9. You know, certainly I think, you know, while that's a disappointment overall and the fact that you lost the game, number two, how it affects preparing for the Patriots game is there is a little extra time to prepare. Will that matter in your estimation?
No, because they gave the players pretty much, I guess the coaches came in on Friday, worked on some game plan and some evaluation, but the players had the weekend off. They had their normal Monday schedule. They didn't have a full practice yesterday. They're off today, and then they'll begin the game planning. So I don't think it was a situation. They're going to be healthier, and I think that'll be the biggest difference, specifically Hasselbeck, who he was sacked seven times. It was the most sacks Seattle had allowed since 2001. So he's going to get a little extra time to heal up, but I don't think in terms of strategizing that it's going to make that much of a difference.
The other thing I was going to ask you in regards to the defense, and I thought you made a great point about the linebackers, because I remember thinking before the season, you know, that's a pretty good group of backers and a pretty good defense. Seemed like it was going to be very competitive. Who has stood out? Has anybody stood out at all on that side of the ball?
Yeah, Marcus Trufant's played very well.
Okay.
Now, you can't really – as a cornerback, it's always tough because people tend to – teams tend to throw to the other side.
Right.
They stay away from him and would be much more content to pick on either Josh Wilson, who's a second-year corner, or Kelly Jennings, who's a third-year corner, who began the year as the starter but's been demoted. But Trufant has played very well. He's been their best coverage guy, and kind of up and down. That he's been the one that's distinguished himself. They have a defensive tackle, Brandon Mebane, who's in his second year, who he's a good space eater inside. He plays hard. He works very hard. I think he's someone that they see as a player that's going to be a force going forward. But aside from that, I mean, they don't have anybody. They don't have a single player with more than five sacks this season. They don't have a single player that has more than two interceptions. So I really think that those two are sort of the if you're looking for bright spots on the defense, that's about the extent of it.
Might we see, I mean, the Patriots obviously had their own problems hanging on the football this last week, though, but would you be at all surprised to see Trufant match up against Randy Moss?
No, I wouldn't, because they did that with Terrell Owens.
Yep.
That Trufant really stuck on him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do think that we will see that, because Josh Wilson is a smaller corner, and I mean, nobody matches up with Randy. Randy's one of the most gifted athletes in the league, but I think they feel they'll have more of a shot with Trufant as opposed to send in Josh Wilson.
Certainly stands to reason it'd be that way. Would you consider Danny, how would you term the future for the Seattle Seahawks, both in an immediate sense for this next week or the remainder of this season and the seasons that will follow under new leadership?
Well, I think that's going to be the big question. I see this as sort of a crossroads point. This team has had a great run of success. A lot of that with an offense that Mike Holmgren put together, and now you have sort of the completion of the changing of the guard, that you had a new president that came here in 2005 with Tim Ruskell. You'll have his first coach that he's hired in place now in Jim Mora. I think you'll see a change to a more run-oriented offense in the future, and maybe we'll look back and see this was the transition year when you had some of the personnel changes done in anticipation of a new coach were made. Or you look back at it as I think that there's a lot of people that are very pessimistic about the future of the defense, the future of the franchise, and specifically the defense going forward, that this is a defense that should have been pretty good given the number of free agent acquisitions they've made in recent years and the number of draft picks that they've used on that side of the ball. And Ruskell, the president, he's known for having a great day. He was one of the architects of the Tampa Bay defense. with Warren Sapp and Rondé Barber and Derek Brooks that really put that group together, a Super Bowl caliber defense that did win a Super Bowl. And there's a feeling that there may have been some miscalculations here and that it's going to take a couple years to recover. So I think there's a big question. I don't think anybody holds out hope that anything is going to get turned around this season. Actually, there's a fair number of fans, I think, that are rooting for the highest draft pick possible. But as far as going forward, there are some people that are very worried that this is not an aberration and that this sort of spells that there's going to be some tough times ahead.
Wow, that's great stuff. I have to ask you one more, Danny. Do you feel like the frustration factor has sort of maybe overtaken everything else here, or are guys still able to realize, you know, and go about their business week to week and know because of the injuries, because of, you know, the eventual changeover in leadership in Seattle that maybe better days are ahead? How are the players handling the frustration?
You know, I think they're handling it pretty well, and I think that they have a very professional locker room, that you haven't had any finger pointing. I thought that the game against Dallas on Thanksgiving was pretty telling because they played hard. They got down. They were down big early. I mean, Dallas really just did what they wanted. There was 24 points the first four possessions. They really just there was very little opposition, and I thought the defense played better in the second half. And if ever you were going to see a team sort of roll over, it was that situation against that size of a team. And Dallas is kind of getting it going. I think they've been very professional about it. I think that there is an understanding that some of what has happened is beyond their control in terms of the injuries, and that it's not certainly not fun and jovial, but that there's been an enthusiasm that team has played with. And I haven't seen many games where I felt that they really came out just tanked it. I think that it is a professional group of guys.
Well, I know that last week this game was pulled off of NBC's Sunday night schedule and instead will be one of the regular regional games, which we'll get to see at 4 o'clock our time. Did that surprise you at all when you heard that?
No, and actually Hasselbeck had a really funny joke about it because he was asked about something about the what do people know about the Patriots, and he said, well, people know a lot about the Patriots. They're always on primetime. And somebody said, well, not this next week. And he kind of looked at him and he goes, that's not their fault.
You know what? I always liked Matt. I knew Matt when he was at Boston College, so it's yeah. You know, both of him and his brother. And I think he's one of those guys that, you know, to me, has developed maybe way more than anybody thought possible. He has done the absolute utmost with his ability, and he continues to improve. And does anybody, you know, it kind of begs the question, does anybody lay this at his feet?
No, I think there's been some. No, I don't. I think there's been a fair amount of understanding that, A, he's playing at this point when a lot of guys, he had a nerve condition in his back that was causing a deadness in his leg.
Right.
And he came back from that. And that was actually an injury that doctors, when he was first diagnosed, told him, like, look, this might be serious enough. You might not play again this year. And he really worked hard to come back because he feels that that's sort of what a team's leader does, that you earn respect in the locker room by playing. Like that's sort of how it works. And I think people, for the most part, the only concern they have about Matt is he physically going to be right again next year? That any sort of downturn this season is due entirely to the physical his physical status and the state of the offense, which really Matt has a lot of credibility in this area, and there has not been a lot of criticism of him.
Well, I'm actually kind of happy to hear you say that. That doesn't surprise me in the least about Matt Hasselbeck at all.
Yeah.
Well, you got one right there. If you can get him healthy, then perhaps things will change out. How much more do you actually think he'll play? Has he even talked about it?
Yeah, he said that he's playing, he's healthy enough to play, and at any point they make a decision about that, it won't be his decision. I mean, that's somebody else's. You could see a situation later in the year after a couple more games if they would look at playing somebody else, depending on if he gets hit a few more times. But as it is right now, he's playing, and there's not any indication that the team is thinking about changing course on that.
Danny O'Neill covers the Seahawks in the National Football League for the Seattle Times. Danny, great stuff. I sure appreciate the time.
And, not a problem, John.
And it was a lot of fun. And listen, I know sometimes as someone who covers a beat, and when the beat doesn't go very well, that it can kind of bog down on you. So hang in there, and I appreciate the information today.
You bet, and I hope we get some sun out here for you this weekend.
We'd love that. Thank you.
All right.
Appreciate
Take
that.
It
Thank
easy.
You got it. That's Danny O'Neill again from the Seattle Times joining us here inside the Playbook. Great stuff today. Good insight. I realize it's kind of tough to really dig for things on a team that's 2-10, but nevertheless, some very forthright comments by O'Neill. And if you're just tuning in, or you are perhaps logged on right in the middle of the conversation, you might want to download the podcast on this one to get his entire comments, because it's very, very good. SeattleTimes.com is where you can see his stories, as well as his Seahawks blog. If you want to check that out, it would be well worth your time on it, because he's definitely plugged into what's going on. So at least in terms of what the Patriots have facing them this week, is they have a team that's still very banged up. Like the Patriots are. They have a team that's down on itself. They have a team that got physically bullied for the most part by the Dallas Cowboys on Thanksgiving Day. They have a team that has a coach that is, in effect, a lame duck, even though nobody really wants to call it that. They're trying to pay him due respect because of where he's brought the franchise from, mediocrity overall. And unfortunately, this year, it's just kind of all snowballed them into a 2-10. Wow. To me, this puts even more pressure on the Patriots to be successful on Sunday. You cannot lose this game. And maybe I've kind of answered my own question to you at the top of the day here. Our question of the day is this Patriots team still, in your estimation, a playoff caliber team? Well, they won't be if they lose this game on Sunday. I think that's pretty clear. One thing that we've kind of gleaned, at least from that interview. What do you think? Need to see your answers. Come on, kids. Let's go. Fire off a quick email. webradio@patriots.com. Is this Patriots team still, in your estimation, at 7-5, right now as they presently consist, is it a playoff caliber team? Plus your nitpicks from Sunday, of which I know there are many. And I'll jump at a few more of those as well as we continue right here inside the Playbook.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com. Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place, a once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy, and the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips, and we love CBS Team Restaurant. They've got about a million TVs, and their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins. We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning.
Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie, both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
When you've got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CMS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Hour number two of Patriots Playbook for a Tuesday here on Patriots.com Radio. John Rook, glad to be back in the saddle with you here in studio at Gillette Stadium after missing out last week for college basketball work and travel. And obviously it was the holiday week, and I hope that you had a good holiday. And, you know, I didn't, it wasn't my intent to miss out on the entire week, but just with traveling and such, having to go by coastal as the Patriots are going to do this week and next week, it just got to be difficult to work out the strategy. What's that? Okay, that's fine. We'll be happy to have him. Brian Lowe from Patriots Today will join us in just a little bit here inside the playbook, as he normally does on Tuesdays. But last week, you know, I mean, you get it with a holiday week. I'm sure many of you had your own things that you had going on. You have him on now. Oh, okay. I didn't realize he was going to do it on the phone as opposed to being down here. Oh, B. Lowe.
I try to change things up on you all the time.
Oh, that's quite all right, buddy. How's it going?
Not too bad. Not too bad. How you doing today?
Well, you're kind of scrambling then, I guess, a bit and trying to get things together for today's program?
I'll take a no comment on that because I'm actually not in the building today. But, you know, hey, every now and then, you know, I scrambled yesterday to get done what I needed to get done today. So there you go.
And that's why, of course, you're out of the building today. Okay, I get that.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Was it as bad in person as it appeared to be watching the bits and pieces that I did on the television?
Yeah, I would say so. I would say it was as bad a 31 minutes of football as you could get, starting with the final minute of the second half of the first half when, you know, you have first and goal at the 9. And it was, you know, incompletion or drop pass by Randy Moss would have been a touchdown.
Right.
Two other incomplete passes intended for Moss, one of which, you know, probably should have been intercepted by Ike Taylor. And then a missed chip shot field goal that, you know, Stephen Gostkowski is having a sensational year. And one missed 27-yarder in the rain isn't going to change the fact that he's having a great year. But that's a field goal that you should be able to make. So getting no points out of that and then the ensuing 30 minutes in the second half was just as bad a half of football as you probably ever see this team or probably a team coached by Bill Belichick ever play.
Yeah, I think that was what was most disappointing to me in the fact that it just, you know, it seemed to be a total and complete letdown. And I know that the players at least seemed to, in the locker room afterward, and perhaps you could speak to this, Brian, they seemed to all kind of take their own personal share of the blame in this. So it was good, I guess, that there wasn't a lot of finger pointing.
Yeah, I mean, this team, you know, you tend to get after a loss. There's certainly fewer players who, you know, end up, you know, making themselves available to the media for whatever reason. But you get a core group of guys who, when they address a loss after a game, there's no sugarcoating, there's no excuse making, there's no, well, the weather, well, we have injuries. There is absolutely none of that. Some guys are pretty explicit in their, you know, I am to blame. Randy Moss comes to mind in this particular instance. Matthew Slater, after the game, he was, despondent, and he said, "Hey, he felt he cost the team the game." Now, other guys like Ellis Hobbs came to his defense and said, "Look, no one specific play cost us the game, but hey, they're willing to take the blame where it's due." There's not a single player who I spoke to after that game, or who I can remember speaking to after any bad loss, who has ever really pointed fingers or shifted blame. Some simply don't speak at all, but the ones who do, they say, "Hey, listen, that was a bad performance. We have to play better than that." And usually what they say after that is, "We will play better than that." And that's kind of the mentality they've used to avoid really ever having back-to-back losses. They've done it once in 6 years.
Is the fact that this team is going to have to go out to the West Coast again and will play a 2-10 Seattle team, is that a good thing or a bad thing right now?
If I'm Mike Holmgren and the Seahawks, I'd be worried for a number of reasons. I just think that this team, there's something about it. It's hard to put a finger and specify exactly what it is. They take losses hard, and they take it personal, and they bounce back. I mean, you look at what was it after the San Diego game, the Denver Monday night game, where they absolutely destroyed. That was immediately after the San Diego game. They destroyed Denver, and that's what they do after a loss. Seattle, is just having such a tough time. I mean, I think they just have a terrible offensive line. They've just absolutely gotten destroyed by too many teams. I don't see that at all. I don't see that being a struggle. I could potentially see the following week being a struggle for a few reasons. Like, I don't think Oakland's very good, but I do kind of think that the way the Patriots performed against San Diego, it may have had something to do with, being a little road weary. I'm not going to blame it on that. I mean, they certainly weren't even in the game at all, but I would say that there could be a bit of a struggle against Oakland for a number of intangible reasons. But listen, the schedule the Patriots have down the stretch, and they're virtually in must-win territory right now, really couldn't be much better other than 3 out of 4 on the road, I would say.
Just going to ask you, because I talked about this right off the top of the show, there's no question in my mind this team has to win out in order to reach the playoffs. Do you feel like that's the case?
I do. I think, put it this way. The other teams that are in the mix, whether it be the Jets in terms of the division or the Colts and Ravens in terms of the wild card,
right,
none of these teams play each other down the stretch. If you get Miami into the mix, which they are in the mix, Miami plays the Jets. But other than that, it's possible for all of these teams to go 4-0, in which case the Patriots would be on the outside looking in. So they need help. I think the best, if we're really looking at the schedules here, and I don't have specifically all the schedules in front of me, but Baltimore has a tough schedule remaining. They still have Dallas, they have Pittsburgh, and they have Washington.
Right.
And I think they close with Jacksonville. So the way Jacksonville has looked, including last night, that shouldn't be a tough one. But, Baltimore is a team that has been, Baltimore and Atlanta are the two most positively surprising teams in the league this year. But that's a fairly tough schedule, 3 in a row, Washington, Pittsburgh, Dallas. And they've got a rookie quarterback, they've got a young offense, and I would look at Baltimore as the team, if the Patriots do need help to get in the playoffs, I'd look at Baltimore as the team that could potentially give them that help. But if the Patriots lose a game and only go 3-1 down the stretch here, they would need Baltimore to do no better than 2-2 in order to be even with them, and then you get into tiebreakers. So they really, the Patriots really do have to go 4-0 if they want to get in the playoffs. And if they lose one game, well, put it this way also, if the Patriots are able to lose a game and still get in the playoffs, it really cannot be one of the AFC games.
That's absolutely right.
They can't lose to Oakland or Buffalo because their conference record, as it is not very good. Their conference record is only 5-5.
That's absolutely correct. I mentioned that off the top. I thought that that the only way that the Patriots would be able to sneak in, and I thought that I think personally a loss, especially if it's an AFC loss, will do them in because the tiebreaker is not going to come for the division crown. The tiebreaker is going to come for the wild card most likely coming to play. And right now they've got 5 AFC losses. They're not going to beat anybody with that kind of a record.
No, if it comes down to, if they are still in play for the division, which, technically they are. I mean, they would need to have 2 more wins this month than the Jets in order to get that division title, but they're 3-2 in the division, so that Buffalo win, that Buffalo game at the end of the season would be huge if they're still in the mix for the division entering that final week. But with a 5-5 conference record, if that ever comes into a tie-breaking scenario with either, it can't be with Indy because they automatically lose with Indy because they lost to them head-to-head, but if that comes into play with Baltimore, Baltimore's conference record, if I'm not mistaken, is 7-3 maybe. They have a much, much higher conference percentage than the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
So, if the Patriots are able to get into the playoffs while losing a game down the stretch, it would have to be the Seattle or Arizona game. And, you know, I mean, I would say on paper they should win those games. I mean, Arizona's having an impressive year, but, you know, I feel like they've really had a terrible time coming east. And you have to figure if there's some inclement weather that that plays into the Patriots' favor on that day.
Yeah, you would think so. I guess at the very least what we don't have to worry about is whether or not we have to rest our starters for the playoffs, huh?
No worries about that. No worries about that at all. I think Tennessee might be the only team that has to make that decision. But I'll tell you what, John, as interesting as last year was, where you know, you're wondering which record is going to be broken on which week and are they going to make history, this one, you know, the way this upcoming month is shaping up has a lot of intriguing elements in it. And I think all you can ask for is that the Patriots are still alive in the last week of the season. That's, you know, it's going to be an interesting month. It's going to be sort of fun to watch these different scenarios play out week by week, you know, doing some scoreboard watching. I mean, listen, the Patriots players and Bill Belichick will never want to say, hey, we're looking at the scoreboard and all that. But as a fan, I think this is interesting. I think it's interesting. It's a little different after what we experienced last year. And, you know, we can really see what this team is made of down the stretch as they, you know, as they're really, their backs are really against the wall.
There's no doubt in my mind that they'll be scoreboard watching. They wouldn't be human, and right, they wouldn't be competitors if you didn't start to kind of like, you know, peek a little bit as to how the Jets are doing or how the Dolphins are doing, or maybe even more specifically now, how the Colts and the Ravens are doing.
Right, and you can just hope that they're not literally scoreboard watching when it's, you know, third and five and they're, you know, the play clock's winding down. You don't want them to literally peek at the scoreboard at that time, but a little bit of, you know, figurative scoreboard watching will be okay.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Are you going out to the West Coast?
I am going out to the West Coast.
What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts about making the trip for the second time? And do you feel like anybody in the locker room shares your sentiments?
You know what? I feel like everything went, you know, about as well as it could from a, you know, from a logistics standpoint. I think most of the players were pretty satisfied, I think, with, you know, the practice field they played on. You know, the meeting space. I mean, being a part of the team travel group, you know, I was in the hotel with them, not with them in meetings and all that, but, you know, it seemed like it was a pretty good setup and it was pretty easy to get a lay of the land, if you will, right from the get-go. And I think it's kind of natural when you're on the road for 10 days that you start to get a little road weary, as I'm sure the players did, as I think all the staff did too, mm-hmm. Just a little bit. But it seemed like all the logistics and accommodations, put it this way, all the things that are out of the players' personal control, I feel like went pretty well. And since they're, you know, it should be the same routine this time, other than, you know, they're spending the full week in the location of the second game as opposed to the location of the first game last time. It was Bay Area and then San Diego. This time it's Seattle, then Bay Area. You know, I would say that most of the players, if they had their druthers, it's, you know, you keep your routine, which is for an away game, you leave on the day before the game and you go right back. But I do feel like for the most part, the trade-off of being away for a week versus two consecutive, two consecutive round trip, 6-hour flights, I think it's a trade-off they accept. We'll see what happens. I mean, they were 1-1 the first time out there. Mm-hmm. The dreadful loss to San Diego, like I mentioned earlier. You'd have to think maybe a portion of the way that they played in that game had something to do with being out on the road for that long. But, you know, I don't think it was the main factor in them losing.
Where will the team headquarter in the week in between the games?
It was a hotel just outside of the Bay Area, outside of.
That I knew. But where will they this next week?
Same place.
Oh, in the same place.
Same place, okay. And as far as I know, they'll be practicing once again at San Jose State.
Okay.
Which is a good, you know, it's a Division I college. They had certainly adequate locker room facilities and practice field and all that, and they actually have a pretty for a school that's not exactly, you know, top tier Division I, they had a pretty good athletic Hall of Fame wing. Jeff Garcia, of course, is one of the main alums. They had it was actually a nice little walk through their little athletic. They've had quite some achievements in the past. So,
right, so
pretty good setup there.
So the familiarity then at San Jose State might actually prove to be a benefit.
I would say for sure. I mean, you know, I guess when you first arrive at a new practice site on the first day, you know, you got to take a few minutes to get your grips and get the lay of the land. So they won't have to worry about that. And I haven't looked at the weather forecast yet, but when they were out there the first time in October, it was absolutely gorgeous every single day. 60s, you know, low 70s, no sun, all sun, no clouds. So we'll see if it's the same kind of weather conditions this time.
Well, you know, I think everybody would be probably anxious to try to put this last week past them as best as they possibly can. But, you know, at the same time, you know, you can't help but wonder, wow, how it went so bad so quickly, especially with those five, you know, turnovers in the half on successive possessions. Did you see anything? Did the guys see anything during the game that foretold this kind of a snowball effect?
No, you mean in terms of how it could get so ugly so fast?
Very, very uncharacteristic, I think, as we all know. And because of that, it just one led to another, to another, to another, and before you know it, boom, you're down 33-10.
Yeah, I would say the only part of that I would say could have been correctable would be the fact that James Harrison was able to virtually put an identical move on Matt Light and make the identical play. I mean, the Matthew Slater fumble was absolutely horrific. But that's sort of that's not really a, you know, a scheme type of mistake, or it's probably a mental mistake or just a rookie mistake. It's one of those things that could happen, I guess to anyone at any time. So you kind of put that one aside. And then, you know, Matt Cassel was not having a good day, whether that was in part because he was having trouble getting a grip on the ball or whatever. You know, his interceptions, one of them is tipped. It looked like the one to Benjamin Watson. It looked like it was, you know, a little too. It would have been a sensational catch, I believe. So you kind of split the blame there. I just think that those sacks. I mean, that was the one thing that you could say, boy, those are momentum, absolute momentum killers. And to have that happen twice in a row, you can't let that happen. Now, Matt Light is certainly not the first and won't be the last tackle to get obliterated by James Harrison. He's emerging as one of the finest pass rushers in the league. Whether the solution would have been to put more help on that left side or for Matt Cassel to realize after the first one that, hey, you know, we're not getting the edge on that matchup, you know, Matt Light, James Harrison. I've got to be much more aware of that and either get rid of the ball quicker or get myself away from that left side of the line. That would be the one area that I would say they really should have found a way to correct. When you turn it, but you know, even if they did correct that and they were able to avoid the strip sack on that play, I think, you know, the Steelers were just a better team and they were getting after it more and the Patriots just weren't able to, advance the ball. I mean, even, you know, their only touchdown of the game came when the offense picked up, the ball at about the 14-yard line after Mike Vrabel's interception. So this was a day where the Patriots, the Steelers defense truly was proving its number one ranking in the NFL.
Matt Light obviously has had a pretty good year, and then, of course, he had such a tough day on Sunday. Did he have anything extraordinary to say after the game?
No, actually, he declined comment after the game. And
doesn't surprise me, to be honest with you.
It does surprise you?
No, it does not.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, he generally is a stand-up guy. I mean, he does generally make himself available after the game, and he said he had to go get some treatment, and, you know, I'm not going to read anything into it, but, yeah, he did not have anything to say in that game, and, you know, it's interesting the way, you know, it was an interesting 7 days for him because he has that fight against Miami. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in my opinion, I other than some of the precedent that had been set in the NFL, I can't see how a guy can punch another guy in during the game and not get suspended. I felt that he probably would have gotten suspended, but he didn't. And I looked at him as a fairly important part of the game against Pittsburgh. He comes into that game. He's on the cover of Game Day magazine in the stadium. I don't know if you saw that. Mm-hmm. And he was also awarded this presidential community service award that there were 12 players around the NFL that on Sunday were awarded. They got a plaque and a pin with representatives from the White House actually in the building to present these players with this award. And then he comes out and has really just a real struggle against the Steelers. So it was kind of an interesting whirlwind there for Matt Light and you know, hopefully he can get everything corrected and be right back to his normal self on Sunday.
Well, there are a lot of assets on this football team that are going to have to be corrected before they play Seattle. And, you know, you can't go into Seattle and think you're just going to win this in a walkover because obviously it is the NFL, even though I know there are a lot of fans that probably feel like that right now. I can almost, you know, I would imagine that no one in that locker room feels like that. There's so much to do. But do the guys, I think, are they beginning, have they kind of gripped onto the hold now that they need to win these games, even though they know they take it one week at a time, but that one more loss could keep them home for the winter?
Yeah, no, I'll tell you what. There were definitely a few players after the game who did allude to the fact that, without saying it in these explicit words, we are in must-win situations. I mean, even Teddy Bruschi, Ellis Hobbs, Logan Mankins, they were really alluding to, you know, they understood where things were at. I mean, I think it was even Logan Mankins after the game who said something to the effect of, you know, this is a tough loss. We've got to keep winning. It looked like the Jets lost today, so that's good. So maybe there already is a little bit of that scoreboard watching, understanding that, you know, knowing which teams are sort of in the mix with them or which teams they have to chase. But there's no question. I think some of the guys on this team that have been around a while, especially Bruschi, they realize that even though you go into every game with a must-win mentality, that it truly is at this time. I definitely did get that sense after the game that there's a realization that there's really no room for error, that they've dug themselves enough of a hole to this point in the season with some of the losses that they've had, losing to some of the teams that that they're battling for wild card spots, that they can't slip up anymore. And you know, whether they look at some of these upcoming opponents in terms of, well, that Seattle team's 2-10, that shouldn't be trouble for us. Oakland's, whatever they are, 3-9, that shouldn't be trouble. You know, I don't think they're looking at it in those terms. I think they realize some of these teams do have some good players. And, hey, you look at Oakland defeating Denver the other day. Denver's a leading a division, and Oakland throttles them. I mean, anything can happen on some of these games. But I think they do understand that there's no room for error.
In your estimation, Bilo, do you think there'll be any aftermath of Ryan Clark's hit on Wes Welker?
Yeah, you know, I would have to think. I would have to think at minimum he'll be fined. You know, I certainly thought it was, you know, there was an appropriate penalty. I mean, it certainly earned a penalty. It was definitely a sort of a defenseless wide receiver.
Right.
And there's no question that deserved the penalty. I mean, I don't know, some of these hits that you've seen in the past where, okay, this guy gets fined, this guy gets suspended. I'm guessing that it's not quite at suspension level. Just, you know, it seems like most of the time.
Well, it was helmet to helmet, so that's got to be a fine, right?
That's true. Yeah, no question, it's got to be a fine. And you see some of the. I mean, I know Vince Wilfork. I read about what he said. I didn't hear it, but Vince Wilfork was sort of saying, "Hey, if I get called into the commissioner's office for some of the hits I've had, then this guy better get called in as well." And I heard Vince also say that the team was shown some video of before the game of a series of Ryan Clark hits and be aware of this guy. So he might be a guy who had some precedent in the past of having these hits. I'm not sure if he's been fined in the past, but I would say no question he gets fined, but I'd be surprised if there's a suspension, though. And the bigger question for the Patriots, though, is the health of Wes Welker. And, you know, to this point, I don't think there's been much known. I think the first word we get about his condition, if he has a condition at all to speak of, would be tomorrow at practice.
That is correct. And the only thing that we do know is that his streak of catching 6 straight passes, 11 games to start the year, was broken. So that's really all you have to go on. And you're right. We'll find out a little bit more when we read the injury report tomorrow. I was just interested to note, though, what Clark said after the game. He said the ball got tipped, but the officials told him that he said he should not have left my feet. I do not know how to control that.
Well, hey, the onus is on the player.
Maybe
the onus is on the player to control it.
Exactly. I mean, there's really no other way you can do that.
You know, 95% of plays where, you know, it's an incomplete pass or whatever, there are wide receivers still running routes, and you know, 98% of the time you don't see a hit like that. So most players are able to control that. I mean, I guess it's hard for me to speak about it if I've never been in that position. But
here's my Brian. Here's my guess. My guess is that if he's a little light in the wallet, he'll figure a way out of how to control it.
I would imagine so. And you know, Ryan Clark. I mean, I don't know what his salary is, but some of these fines get pretty steep. And you're right. These players, I think most of them are able to control it if they really put their mind to it. And I think the burden sometimes also is on the coaches to say to these players, hey, look, you're going to put your own team in a bind if you get penalized and then, let's say, suspended for some of these hits. And if you're having trouble controlling it, you know, we'll take part of the burden to teach you the ways to do it, I guess. I don't know. But it's ultimately up to the player. The player's in that position. It's a split-second kind of thing. But, you know, clearly Wes Welker was looking in the wrong direction. I mean, clearly Wes Welker had understood that the play was over, so Clark should have been able to control himself there and not launch himself into Welker.
Right. Bill, yeah. Before I let you go, I'd be remiss if I didn't get your thoughts on going to Wembley next year to play the Tampa Bay Bucks in the regular season, as it was announced yesterday.
Yeah, well, John, listen, we're only concerned with going to Quest Field right now. Quest Field,
oh, you're going to give me the one game at a time thing? Get out of here!
I'm not looking. We've got 20 games to play. I it's too early for me to say if I'll be part of that travel party, but I'll tell you what, that would be a great experience. I've never been to England, and I heard a few of the players who said yesterday, obviously they're not looking ahead to that game, but
of course not. Yeah.
I think it was actually Logan Mankins who said, I'm not high on my to-do list, is kind of what he said, but if they send it to London, we'll go to London. It's interesting. And I think that, it seems like as long as the NFL is going to do this, they try to do it the right way and give the teams a bye the next week. And honestly, I mean, as far as the travel goes, is it that much worse than when the Patriots go to Seattle this week? I mean, I don't think the travel is going to be, the travel itself shouldn't be that bad. I think the only worries that Bill Belichick and the team would probably have is, are we there for a football game, or are we there to be like sort of a showcase for the NFL? And are they going to have to get roped into, some of the other, the day before the game or a couple days before the game, all the other things, sort of like a Super Bowl week? That would be the only worry. But then again, it doesn't necessarily put one team at a disadvantage over the other. Both. It's not like the Patriots or Buccaneers. It's not like one will be traveling that much more than the other. So I don't think it's really, too much of an advantage or disadvantage either way. They'll have the bye week the following week. It'll be an interesting experience, and it'll be interesting if Bill Belichick's asked about it tomorrow and see what he.
My guess will be he'll probably decline comment on it directly. But number one, I just thought it was interesting because especially in the fact that it's a road game, and whether or not if the Patriots been asked to take a home game over to Wembley, whether or not they would have gone for it.
Right. Yeah. And I'm not sure exactly how that works if the NFL.
There has to be compensation.
There has to be compensation, and I might be wrong here, but I think when the NFL decided to start this London thing a couple of years ago, this may not be official, but I think the plan or the goal is over every 32-year period, every team hosts a game overseas. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that was official or if I'm just reading what the sort of the plan or the idea was that's a long period of time, but over the long haul, it sort of evens out. But it's certainly a disadvantage. I mean, for Tampa Bay, all I was saying earlier was within the sphere of this game, there's no advantage one way or the other, Patriots or Buccaneers. But for the Buccaneers overall in the 2009 season, they really only have seven home games. And so there's a bit of a disadvantage there. And whether or not the Patriots were asked about it or if they ever will be asked about it, I don't know. And I don't know what their answer would be.
Probably won't be in the near future anyway, since they're going to go over next year as a road team. So
we won't
have to worry about it for a while anyway.
Exactly. Well, and the other good thing about this is the game is on October 25th,
mm-hmm.
Which means that their bye week will be the following week, which, I don't know if that's week 8, 9, around there, but it's right in the middle of the season, which is really the ideal time for a bye week.
So absolutely.
That may be one, sort of hidden silver lining in that.
Bilo, what do you got coming up Patriots Today-wise this week?
Well, we have got, we're wrapping up some of the stuff from the Pittsburgh game and talking a little bit about what we just talked about today, just sort of the schedule going forward, the fact that they're kind of in a bit of a hole. And actually, we've got a little bit of interesting, some interesting Wes Welker stuff in the show, too, not necessarily from this game, but he was mic'd up recently. We got some interesting stuff there. And then the next couple days, it'll be looking towards the Seahawks game and this West Coast trip. And then all week next week we'll be filing reports each and every day from the West Coast, so you can check that out as well. And maybe I'll join you too next week.
How about that? By the way, you didn't have it mic'd up during the hit, did you?
No. And it wasn't during that game. And it's a piece that I haven't even seen, but it's pretty good on the show.
That would have been remarkable.
That would have been.
You'll have to work on that for next time.
Yeah, right. Another one that would have been remarkable, Pierre Woods was mic'd up when he pointed his mouth. That's another one we got to look for tomorrow.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. Brian, thanks for the time, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Always a pleasure.
All right, man. Brian Lowe, Patriots Today, with us here inside the Playbook, as he is on Tuesdays. But he's outside of the studio today because he's got important big things going on in his life, I suppose. I wonder if the job is one of them. Can we...
Can we verify that? Is his job still a part of his, you know, everyday life, as it is for everybody around here? All right, let's take a timeout. We'll get to some emails coming up inside the playbook.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call, and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com. Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy. And the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips. And we love CBS Scene Restaurant. It's got about a million TVs. And their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins. We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Welcome back inside the playbook as we roll along for a Tuesday. Webradio at Patriots.com is where you can reach us as always. We are going to hear the thoughts from Dean Pease coming up in just a few minutes here, just because I wanted you to have that sort of perspective. It's something we haven't spent a lot of time doing inside the playbook this year, but there are the conference calls that are available here on the website that you can hear unencumbered with the questions and everything included. And we're going to include it in the body of the show here because it happens to be my chief nitpick, which is with the defense this year. And I know a couple of emailers have already said, hey, what are your thoughts on DMP's return for next year? And quite frankly, I'm not going to, your guess is as good as mine right now. I mean, I think it really largely depends on how this team finishes out the year. If they win four straight games here and finish 11-5 and squeeze into the playoffs, I don't think there's any reason to think that his job is necessarily in jeopardy. But if this team falls flat, doesn't reach the playoffs, and gives up 350, 400 yards a game in the process, well, sure. I think everybody's going to be held accountable. And that goes from Dean Pease, you know, to Josh McDaniels. Everybody will be held accountable. You have to be. It's not just one person's fault if you're going at it from a team perspective, which is what I think this team is trying to do. But, yes, the onus is on the defense. I think the defense is largely underachieved. Again, based on my own criticisms and my own standards that I thought that this defense was capable of performing to. And I don't believe they have met that. And so if that means that the coordinator is going to be held responsible, then so be it. Let's see how these last four games play out. Because if the Patriots do win these last four and they get into the playoffs, then the story, and properly so, the story will be how the Patriots overcame all of this adversity to win 11 games and reach the postseason. That'll be the story. The story won't be, oh, how the defense underperformed to the point where they could have won 13 games. No, no, no. That won't be the story. Let's let this play out. Definitely. A couple of emails from earlier today. John in South Carolina says, if we look to the bright side, we're homers. If we try to be realists, we are letting the team down. I will continue to pull for my beloved Pats, but our fate is not in our own hands. Truth be told, it is not very likely we make it. If we do, great, but there is no harm in trying to figure out the future. With that in mind, who's a free agent? Can we get in our secondary next year, and is someone dying in the studio? That was from earlier with PFW. We'll jump into the secondary free agency stuff. Granted, let me assure you, that will get a huge look in the offseason. 110% guaranteed. I think the Patriots will most likely be as vigorous in the free agent market. And my own personal thought here is they will be as vigorously active in the free agent market as they have ever been. And yes, that also includes potentially holding on to Matt Cassel. I'm not of the opinion that you should just cut him and let him go and be done with it and move, you know, Kevin O'Connell in as the backup quarterback. I think Matt Cassel has proven now, and I said this a couple of weeks ago, Matt Cassel has proven that he is a marketable commodity, and you must keep your marketable commodities. Now, you don't want to pay $7 million or whatever for a backup quarterback. I think we all realize that. But you do not let him go under any circumstances until, number one, you're absolutely certain that Tom Brady's back and ready to play on schedule. And my guess is that you won't have come to that realization until the process for a free agency and such has moved along. So the Patriots will probably have to, you know, bleep or get off the pot. My guess is they probably will bleep. And they'll probably. I'm not saying they will or they won't. I think that they should franchise him and try to, hopefully, but before they do that, work out a trade. I didn't think that 2 or 3 weeks ago, guys. I really didn't. I have changed my mind on this over the course of the last three, you know, weeks, especially back-to-back 400-yard games, you know, has a tendency to do that to you. But I think the Patriots now can get something for him, and I think they should. I think it is in the franchise's and the football team's best interests to see if they can't get something for him. There will be many teams looking for a quarterback, just like there will be many teams looking for a head coach. You know, Cassel may not be the only guy that goes. Maybe McDaniels goes as well this next offseason. It's possible. It's entirely possible. So you're going to have to do what you can to get something for nothing. You don't want to let somebody go for zero. And if that means you got to put the tag on him, well, then you put the tag on him. But I also think you try to, you know, actively work a deal. And I think teams will know that the Patriots are trying to do that. But if the teams are desperate enough for a quarterback, then they'll be willing to deal with the Patriots then, won't they? Just my two cents on the subject. I know that will probably play out before too long. All right, this one comes from Gustavo, who writes to us from the Federal University of Rio Grande in Brazil. Gustavo, it's wonderful to hear from you. Thank you very much for taking the time. It says, first of all, greetings from Brazil. I'm a Patriots fan since 2005 and have been listening to your show since the beginning of the season. It says, congratulations for the nice show. Thank you. I used to believe that the Patriots were playoff worthy, especially because of Cassel's improvement not talking about the two consecutive 400-yard games, but the whole season progression. However, after Sunday, I have to say that I do not believe it anymore. God, what third quarter was that? Can you guys explain that? Nope. I cannot. Based on what I've seen, and I know what everybody else lived through around here, and undoubtedly what many of you also have to had to either watch in person or on television, there's very few explanations for that. Sometimes things just snowball, and I kind of brought that up with Danny O'Neill from the Seattle Times earlier. Sometimes you just things snowball, and they get out of control, and you just don't know how to pull yourself up and out of the mess. And I think that kind of happened to the Patriots on Sunday. Now, there are some things that you can control, and I think a lot of it has to do with concentration, or in this instance, a lack thereof. A couple of things usually conspire to create turnovers. Number one, weather. Number two, a lack of concentration of the individual who loses the ball, who loses the possession. And when you have both things going against you, well, then turnovers are bound to happen, and I really think that's what happened on Sunday. Matthew Slater admitted as much. You know, he said, I blew it. Losing the game was my fault. May not be quite that extent, but at least he understood it was his responsibility. And it was. Randy Moss, you know, he took ownership of the drop touchdown pass. Give him some credit. At least he took ownership. But now I want to see him catch those stupid things, because how many drop passes has Randy Moss had this year that you have said yourself, oh, he should have caught that? I bet we're getting close to double digits now, aren't we, kids? I know I am in my book. Gustavo also says here, now we're behind the Ravens and the Colts, and they seem to be the wild card teams to be in the playoff. Maybe the Jets lose a couple of games, we get back on track. Let's see. Well, let me get back to my PhD studies before my advisor fires me. Goodness, we don't want that. Congratulations on the effort for the PhD. And Gustavo, we appreciate your taking the time to listen and contribute to the program. It's greatly appreciated. Good to hear from you, and don't be a stranger. So that's Gustavo in Rio. Okay, William sends this one. Look at the weaker playoff teams. The Colts, the Jets, yes, the Patriots can get in, then be there as the team implodes against them. Then they meet the Titans in the divisional round. But he says, your question was not if they'll lose the divisional round. That is true. Are they a playoff-type team? Yes, he says. Remember, playoff teams come in two stripes, good and flawed. They are flawed. Okay. I actually think that's a pretty good explanation, William. You're very accurate when you say playoff teams come in a couple of different types. You know, the teams that are quote-unquote contenders and the teams that barely squeeze in. Or in your case, as you put it, good and flawed. Yeah, the Patriots are flawed. And I think the one thing that really stands out to me about the potential for a playoff tournament in the NFL this year is that there are very few teams that I would call good. We said this a few weeks ago. There wasn't one team, really, before the halfway point anyway. There was not one team that appeared to be a world beater. One team that appeared to be head and shoulders above the others, not like the Patriots were a year ago. That there were maybe the Titans and the Giants that were kind of eking out ahead of everybody else, but then there were probably another 10 to 12 teams that were in the next pack behind the Titans and the Giants in terms of the elite in the league this year. I'm not really ready to stray from that particular analogy just yet. You'd still have to put the Titans and the Giants up at the top, wouldn't you? I do think, though, that you've seen some other teams emerge. You know, Tampa has emerged a little bit. The Dallas Cowboys look like they might be back on track. Washington is still a player. In the AFC, Pittsburgh, based on what they did to the Patriots on Sunday, you'd have to say that the Steelers certainly look like they also could be emerging. The Colts have run off, you know, what, 5 wins in a row now, so they are emerging. But I think you still have to put Tennessee and the New York Giants up at the top of the list, right? So if you put them as good and everybody else to a certain extent flawed, doesn't that lead you to believe that this still could potentially be wide open? This is the year where a flawed team, by your logic, William, and I guess really it's good logic. I didn't say it was flawed logic. It's good logic. This is the year, more so than any other, that a team like last year's Giants could actually go in and win. I mean, a wild card team, win the Super Bowl. This is a year that could happen. This is a year maybe that it should happen.
I kind of think so. I think if you're the Patriots, all you have to hope you can do is make the tournament. Make the tournament. Get in. You know what you have to do to make the tournament. You're going to have to win out. And then even so, if you win these last four, you still might need help, as Brian Lowe so aptly pointed out. Other than the Jets still playing, the Dolphins, if you can count the Dolphins still in the mix here, none of these teams that are ahead of the Patriots right now, Ravens, Colts, Jets, none of these teams play the Patriots here in the last 4 weeks. They don't even play each other. So help has to come from somewhere. It's conceivable each of those teams could go 4-0, and the Patriots go 4-0, and the Patriots still miss the playoffs. That is a possibility. It may not be likely, because the Ravens do have a very tough schedule, I think, going down the stretch here. But it is possible. You need help. And flawed teams need help. There are more flawed than good. So let's see how that plays out. Good email. Dagmar from Miami. Where have you been, Dagmar? Huh? Where have you been? Says, John, I haven't sent any email since week one because of my school schedule. Oh, okay. Well, all right. If you got to go to school, Dagmar, then you have to go to school. I get it. He says, but I always listen to you at night on the replay. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And by the way, may I add here, that if you are listening to this show on a podcast, you've downloaded it, play at a later time, and you're not listening to the live version, you can still send in email. Please, all you have to do, you know the email address, webradio@patriots.com. Send it and just put in the subject line, you know, for Playbook or for John or for, you know, the other guy on after PFW. Because you guys keep all those emails, right, Dan? You guys keep all those. Because I have the message here from strippers from earlier who wrote Boomer Sooner. Just like I knew he would do. Strippers, you know that Oklahoma is lucky. I know it's better to be lucky than good. I wish I had your luck, pal. I wish I had your luck. But you're lucky. You're very lucky. By the way, says he owns a naming rights to a website, bleepthebcs.com. He says he wants to sell it to a Longhorn. I can guarantee you could sell it to a Longhorn. So get to work on it. Okay. Get to work on it. Anyway, he says, so I'm glad you listen at night on the replay. And if you do have a question based on something you hear on the show, fire off the email and just point it to my attention. They'll save it for me and we'll answer it on the next show. How's that? He says, I remember that after having lost Brady on that first week, you asked the listeners like me to give you our opinions about who other than the Patriots was a favorite to win in the AFC. And this is exactly what I wrote. He says, if I have to pick a team other than my Patriots in the AFC, I would say Pittsburgh. And I based that on the idea that Pittsburgh had basically an intact stock of players that have enough playoff experience, but also that they are good playing under late November, December, and January weather conditions. They are a hard-nosed hitting team and often cross the line. I hope our Patriots finish strong, and for the playoffs run, I think we had a shot at it against Pittsburgh, and for that we now depend not only on our own efforts, but also on the failure of others, and that is the part I don't like about being in this situation. Anyway, I wish you the best from Miami. Dagmar, you're dead on. Then kudos to you for doing that, and actually I do vaguely remember the email, just because you're always a good emailer. And yeah, Pittsburgh, one thing that they do well is they play well in harsh conditions, and they've had to over the years because conditions arguably have been no tougher anywhere else than in Pittsburgh over the years. So they've learned how to play in those conditions. Pittsburgh, though, I mean, this was a 10-10 game that should have been 17-10 at halftime, right? Don't you think? Patriots should have been up a touchdown at halftime. Could have completely changed the entire complexion of the football game if you're going into that halftime locker room with a lead. To that extent, I don't feel like this team got pounded. I feel like this team made a couple of mistakes that snowballed into getting pounded, yes. But I'm not afraid of a rematch if it should get that way in the playoffs, are you? No, I'm not. Ultimately, that may be the case. Ultimately, you know you're going to have to play Pittsburgh and Pittsburgh, but that shouldn't intimidate anybody here, right? They won AFC championship games in Pittsburgh. So why would that intimidate anybody around here? The answer is it wouldn't. I would like to have that opportunity. Like I said, this is the year that one of those so-called flawed teams can get in and do damage. Hey, the Patriots were the fait accompli last year, and look what happened. There's no reason they can't turn the corner and turn that same trick on somebody else. And that, as Patriots fans, is probably what you need to focus on right now. Yes, 1 week at a time. Yes, one win at a time. One game at a time. But know that you need to win these last four to have a legitimate shot at reaching the postseason tournament. We'll spend mucho time over the course of the next 4 weeks talking about that very scenario, and I'll look forward to getting all those comments from you on that. Don't forget, In the Hall, coming up next here on Patriots.com Radio with Tip and Brian Morey. So that'll be on right after our program. We'll be back same Pat's time, same Pat's channel tomorrow. Right here on Patriots.com Radio. But I'm going to leave you at least here at this stage of the game of this program by letting you listen into the conference call the Patriots reporters had with Dean Pease, the Patriots defensive coordinator, so you can get some perspective on the game on Sunday and what lies ahead for this walking wounded defense. Dean Pease, Patriots defensive coordinator.
Been up in the box. If you could just maybe comment on that change, what led to it, and how you might be benefiting from that.
Well, what led to it a little bit was getting ready for Miami and kind of going into that game a little bit. Some of their personnel things dictate a lot what we end up calling, and sometimes it's difficult to get that information from the box maybe down to the sideline in time to make the call and get it in. And so what we did was we tried. I've coordinated from up there. In fact, when I coordinated in college, most of the time I was upstairs. So we wanted to try it to see if Bill and I talked about it, to see if I could see things maybe a little better and get them in a little quicker and try to get the calls in quicker. And it seemed to work out pretty good in Miami, so we tried it again this last week. And it's going to be kind of a week-to-week thing based on what the other team does. But it seems you can actually see the game better and see the problems and things like that develop easier from up there than you can on the sideline. You don't have to have somebody tell you.
And Dean, while you can maybe see it better, I would imagine it also takes you a little bit further away from the playing field. How has it affected sort of your feel for the game in that regard?
Well, the only thing it really has affected is, you know, I spent a lot of times, because you got Bill down there, it's a little different in our situation with Bill there, that he can really speak to the defense. A lot of times he would speak to the front seven while I was speaking maybe to the secondary or the linebackers in the secondary. The only difference is he kind of now speaks to the whole group. That's maybe the only downside, is I'm not as close maybe to the secondary and to the players, but the upside of it is that, you know, we can get all the corrections a little quicker and a little cleaner into what actually happened. Sometimes in those first games, we were just kind of trying to figure out what actually happened and kind of work that way. I think right now we got a pretty good grasp on, if there is a problem, here's the problem, here's how we can fix it, and certainly, you know, Bill can relay it to the whole defense down there.
Dean, is there any concern that this late into the season that Gerard Mayo could be wearing down given all the snaps that he's taken this year?
Well, there's always concern on all players that they all got to take snaps. It's just that time of the year where, you know, everybody's gearing up for, everybody's trying to make a run for the playoffs and to do as best we can each game. And it doesn't matter what team you're on, whatever, everybody's got to maybe pull a little extra duty. Everybody's got teams that are probably banged up and guys are out and guys are missing and more guys are taking more snaps. And hey, that's just the way it is. There's nothing you can do about it. Really, to say it's a concern, it's always a concern on all the players, not just Gerard Mayo. But it is what it is. So it's a concern, but you just kind of go on and say, look, you got to deal with it, and they got to deal with it, and they understand it, and we understand it.
You have to watch it closer when it's a rookie who's never been through the late season grind before?
Oh, I don't know. It's you don't know that, because he is a rookie and he hasn't been through it, so you really don't know whether that's the case or not. It could go the other way, too, because he's such a young, vibrant guy. It may be easier on him to go through the late season than it might be an older guy that maybe wears down quicker. So there's no real way of telling. I think every guy's going to be different. I mean, there's some guys that get stronger as the year goes on. I mean, you guys have all wrote about running backs that seem to get stronger as the year goes, and the more carries they have, the stronger they get. Oh, that could be the same thing true on defense. You just don't know. Every guy's an individual case.
Dean, Richard Seymour was on the radio yesterday lobbying for a little more playing time on third down. How difficult are those decisions for you as a coach? You know, obviously he's maybe the most talented defensive player you have, but it's not like you can put him out there for every single snap. So how do you determine where and when he plays?
Well, that's a staff decision, and Bill really plays an important role in that. Bill really does an awful lot of the personnel decisions, and we sit down and talk about what the scheme's going to be and how we're going to play it and what's the best way that we can do it as a team and what's the best way we can rotate players, how can we do this, how can we do that, and it's going to be different every week, game to game, based on what the other team does. And so we just kind of sit down at the beginning of the week and kind of throughout the whole week see how the week goes and determine how that's going to go into the game. And then really, when it comes to personnel decisions, you know, I certainly have input, but Bill's the final say on that.
Can you see where Richard's coming from when he says, you know, I feel like our best players should be on the field on the most important down?
Well, we always try to put what we think is the best situation and the best players on the field at, for that situation. So it's every player, I'm sure, wants to play more, would like to play all the time. And I can tell you is that, you know, we make a decision based on what we think the situation is and who should be on there at that time.
Dean, we've talked about the secondary and third down for much of the season. What are you seeing when teams are converting, especially on the third and longs? It seems like has become more of a problem, I guess, is the best way to put it. You know, Pittsburgh convert a lot of third and five, third and seven, third and ten. Are you seeing anything that's happening or not happening that should or shouldn't be?
Well, generally it's something different every day on time, and it's usually – dealing with some kind of a technique problem is really where that's what bothered me about this last game is that we've got everybody covered but a guy, and generally it was a technique problem more than it was anything else. There's some times where I would certainly say, hey, we could be in a better defense, we could be in a better call. It might have been not the best situation. Hey, sometimes you know that happens, and you just sit there and you say, well, you know, hey, they got me on that one. But, you know, we just got to do a better job of doing some of the techniques that we do, and I think sometimes we, you know, we just got to do a better job of that. I don't think it's any one particular thing that I can put my finger on. It seems like every time I write something down, it's something different or it's a different guy. It's, you know, we got to do better across the board.
Is it more frustrating when it's a technique thing? Because I assume that's something you guys work on from training camp. Is the technique that you're looking for, as opposed to, like you said, if you call one defense and they just beat that defense, it's a little bit different.
Yeah, it is. It does become frustrating. It becomes frustrating if it's especially something that you know that you've emphasized during the week and maybe you give it up, and that's frustrating. Sometimes that's the case. Sometimes it's not the case. I mean, sometimes, too, the offensive player just makes a better play than the defensive player, and you kind of look at those, and the guy makes a great throw, or the guy's diving catch, or falls, you know, 2 inches off the ground, the guy makes a sliding catch. You know, you got to live with some of those. You're not going to get them all. But certainly we have got to do better on third down than what we've been doing. And just, like I say, across the board, all players and me included.
Dean, there was one third down play in particular that I wanted to ask you about. It was a third and two from the 18 in the third quarter. Like there was, you guys were trying to get your sub package onto the field, and at the snap, three guys rushed from Roethlisberger's right, and he had an easy dump off to Miller, the tight end.
Mm-hmm.
Can I assume that wasn't the way that it was designed? That in the maybe in the pre-snap confusion, someone went the wrong way.
Well, no, yeah, you can assume that is correct. What actually happened was the safety didn't get down. He's supposed to actually be on the tight end, bump and run, and he was playing off, and he got the call late. But part of the problem with that call getting in there late was we had some confusion of what personnel they had in the huddle, because they ran the tight end on and then turned around. He went all the way to the huddle and then turned around and ran back off. And we put in another package, and then we made a call late, which should have been an illegal substitution, but it wasn't. So, but anyhow, we got kind of caught on it, and the safety came down late. But you're right. We should have been up there pointed on the tight end.
Dean, I'm just curious if seeing James Harrison have a big game against you guys brought back any memories with the history that you had with him.
Well, it's interesting. You know, it's with James Harrison, the last game of the season in 2001 at Kent State, there's one play left in the season. We're 5-5. Kent State hadn't had a winning season in 20 years. And we're playing Miami of Ohio, and Roethlisberger is the quarterback. And they got the ball on the 20-yard line going in. We're up 24-20. And we know this is going to be the last play, or probably the last play. It's a fourth down, unless they convert a first down. And I remember calling a pressure where we called timeout, and I pulled Harrison over the side and put him on the left side and said, look, you got to get this guy. And they were in the shotgun, and by the time the ball got to the quarterback, to Roethlisberger, Harrison had him sacked. And so I've seen that on the good side, and I've seen it on the bad side. But he was a really excellent player for me.
Didn't he have 5 sacks that game? Was that?
Yeah, in the Miami game, yeah. And we ended up beating them, and it's the first time they'd kind of beaten Miami in who knows how long, and we end up with a winning season. So it was a big play, and obviously he was a very big part of that whole year.
Take a final question?
Dean, I was just wondering what the lack of turnovers for the team, can you read into that, and does it indicate anything?
We're just, what you read into it, we're not creating enough. We're just not doing enough. We just got to hit the second and third guys coming in on the pile, just got to try to get the ball out a little bit more. We got to do a little better job, playing the ball in the air. When you don't get turnovers, it's generally because, you've got one guy tackling the guy, maybe not two or three knocking the ball off, or secondly, you're not playing the ball in the air. We've had a few chances where we've dropped the ball, which would have helped us overall, but it's always a concern. Yeah, you want to create turnovers. I mean, the turnover the other night to start the game out led to a score, which got us off to a good start. Unfortunately, we didn't get any after that, and we just got to keep working on trying to get them.
Have you, just as a follow-up, have you seen a lack of the second and third guy getting in there?
No, not necessarily. I just haven't seen us necessarily ripping the ball off the guy. So we just got to keep emphasizing that point. We've had plenty of times when we've had two and three guys in on the tackle, but I think, we're just making the tackle. We just got to do a better job of trying to maybe strip the ball out of there and get the ball off the runner when we get him held up.
Thanks, everyone. Thank you, Coach.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You bet.